reduction of those policies to the task force, and also what the what they were intended, the objectives they were intended to meet. Then I also created a new section, which is called the background section. Procedural issues about when and how this PDP came into being, because we wanted to make sure that we had a proper and historic record of why we're doing this PDP, and why it's a continuation of a three-year process. The main list that I put in really was a little bit of, I guess you would call it, analysis about what are the points of agreement and disagreement of the task force. It's pretty sparse, as you can see. There's, it was quite difficult to identify some substantive points of agreement, but we've had some comments on the list as well, so I think that should help. And that was it, pretty much, Jordan.
Great, thanks. Why don't I start off, if there are questions for Maria about the current draft, just the comments or recommendations.
Jordan, I have a procedural question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Comments that I sent to the list on, I guess, Friday or Saturday, how did you want to handle those?
I think that, that's a good question. Let me think about that for a minute before we...
Yeah, no problem.
Do people have other questions for Maria while I ponder that?
Yeah, this is Steve. I had a question about the constituency statements. I think you said in you noted in your email, Maria, that the constituency statements on basically the content of this report would be solicited during the public comment period, which I think is what we discussed last week. But then there is still a section on constituency statements that starts by saying, following constituency statements were solicited by the task force chair on 23rd October 2006, and then it kind of reprints, I think, what was in the constituency statements from over a year ago, on the first go-round, with the purpose of who is and the purpose of the contacts. I was just concerned that I wondered why we, if we're really soliciting constituency statements on the substance of this report after the draft report comes out, why would we include the other constituency statements from the earlier version? And I also wondered, was there something I had missed that the task force chair had solicited on 23rd of October 2006 regarding constituency statements? So I guess my question is, why do we need to have a section about constituency statements that simply reprints what the old constituency statements were?
Right, thanks, Steve. To me, it's an open question, and I'm happy to be guided by the task force. Basically, I have reproduced the statements that discuss the purpose of the WHOIS contact, because this task force report is supposed to be dealing with items 2, 3, and 4 of the terms of reference, mm-hmm. at issue of the purpose of the contact. But as you say, we did put these in the earlier this year, which was purpose of WHOIS and purpose of WHOIS contact. Now, we didn't ultimately make a recommendation as to the purpose of the contact. It's a slightly open question as to whether the task return to that issue, and I'd be happy to be guided by you on that. So it's more, to my mind, it's more a procedural question than anything else.
Yeah, my personal take, Jordan, is that we, since we are going to go ahead and ask for consistency statements again, that we might as well just ask constituencies to either include their old comments with regards to item number 2, which is the purpose of the contacts, or if their things have changed for any reason, they can provide whatever changed feelings they have, but to allow constituencies to provide a consolidated statement that addresses all of the remaining work that we have, as opposed to trying to include, make people dig through the stuff about purpose and so on, part of this report. But I'm, like Maria, I'm open to, if other people are I'd glad to hear them.
This is Steve. I would agree with your suggestion, Jordan. I think that's the best way to approach it.
Yeah, I second that. Tony Harris here.
Okay, so failing any other objections, that we'll go ahead and In the preliminary report, we'll remove the reference to the preliminary statements other than the fact that they'll be solicited as part of the public comment period.
Sorry, Jordan, you were breaking up a little bit there.
Sorry, Maria. I was just saying that we should remove the current current constituency statements and add basically just a comment to the effect that we'll be soliciting constituency statements as part of the public comment in parallel with the public comment period.
Super. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions for Maria? We can move to substantive. Suggestions in just a moment, which will include, I've decided now, Ross's points from his email over the weekend. Okay, why don't we move to any suggestions for the report?
This is Steve. Could I get in the queue?
Yep, I'm going to go to Ross's points first.
Fine.
And then anyone else want to be in the queue other than Steve on suggestions for the report? Okay. Ross, maybe a reasonable way to do this would be for you to try to capture in just a sentence or two each of your changes, and we'll see whether or not people, if there's support within the task force, to go ahead and make that change, and if so, we can just get Maria to incorporate it into the next draft.
Would it be more... Has anybody not read the email that I sent around on Saturday?
If it speeds the process, I agree with all the process changes.
Yeah, so maybe actually
they're all one sentences already, Jordan. So if I don't mind taking or answering questions on specific ones, but I think I thought it was fairly concise already.
Yeah. Okay. Actually, I think that's right. So why don't we do this? If anyone has concerns or questions for Ross about any of these points or objections to them, maybe we should have people raise them now and hopefully address them. Otherwise, assuming everyone's happy with them, we can just have Maria have them addressed.
Jordan, this is David Ferris. I just joined, and actually I'm only going to be on for a short while.
Okay, thanks, David.
I have a question regarding one of Ross's comments, but you know what? I'm trying to... Here we go. Yeah, it's the second one, I believe, when he say points on which we have consensus. We have consensus that less data should be published in Who Is. Could you explain exactly what he means about that? By that?
Yeah, sure. The both of those bullet points are very, very similar. Points 2 and 3 I'm referring to. Both of the drafts that are in front of the task force under consideration right now talk about publishing less data via the Who Is. So I would want to see that included in the points of consensus.
But don't we need to be a little more specific, Ross? Because I think, you know, there are two different types of there are two different issues here. One is what types of data should be presented in a publicly accessible Who Is, and the second is can certain people have that information taken out? And I think the OPOC and the special circumstances deal with those two differently. I would defer to Steve on that, but that's my reading of it. Is Steve on the phone?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'd be glad to. I mean, I had a concern about this change also.
So Steve, why don't you can go ahead and speak to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's true in one sense, but if you're comparing this with the status quo, the special circumstances proposal with the status quo, I'm not sure less Who Is data would be published, depending on how you apply the proxy registration situation now. I mean, I think my interpretation is that the data that is published now when someone has a proxy registration that is given to them by a registrar, for example, is that the data that's published there really doesn't serve the purpose of Who Is, no matter which definition of the purpose of Who Is you're being given. And so it may well be that more data that's consistent with the purpose of Who Is would be published under the special circumstances proposal than under the status quo. I mean, I think Ross is technically correct that this would provide a new mechanism for keeping some WHOIS data from being published, but it also would supplant an existing mechanism that I think would be more widespread.
So, but Steve, we do need to make a differentiation between how WHOIS data is publicly available from the special circumstances perspective versus that some people who actually meet the criteria would not have that data publicly accessible.
Yeah, I think Ross is using the word published here to mean publicly accessible, and that, of course, there could be other circumstances in which data that's not publicly accessible is accessible after some procedure is followed.
But my concern is I don't think that there's agreement that necessarily we should reduce that the two different proposals agree that we shouldn't have a technical, a registrant, and a administrative contact. I don't want those two things to be confused because that's not how I read your proposal, Steve.
So I think, David, actually this gets to Ross's second and third bullet, which is the distinction between less data and different data. And I think I understand perhaps what Steve's trying to articulate as well. I think maybe the point on which there's consensus with regards to Ross's second point is something along the lines of that there's a consensus that where there the privacy considerations at least sometimes and in the case of OPOC always mean that. That there should be some ability to remove data from the WHOIS in order to.
Right, I agree with that. I just
address privacy issues.
Yeah, I don't think we have consensus on that point, Jordan, because it's certainly not the way you phrased it there, though.
Yeah,
because it's certainly the case that there's no qualification under the OPOP proposal, which is why I chose the word less. You know, I don't think anybody could look at these proposals on their face and say that both of them will cause the same amount or more data to be published via the WHOIS.
Yeah, so I think that the only problem I see, Russ, is that when I read less data, I might interpret that a little bit more broadly than the special circumstances.
Well, unless Steve is actually proposing to remove the exceptions, then we're talking about publishing less data.
So Ray, I guess my point is, I'm a reasonable reader might read that as thinking that it would publish less like data per person as opposed to less data on an individual case-by-case basis.
But
for specific people, it will cause less data to be published.
Correct. So I think there's just
that's less data.
So
right.
I just think there's some clarification that needs to be explained.
There's some minor rewording here that could probably make that relatively clear.
Maybe one way to put it, this is Steve, is to say that both proposals agree that there should be new mechanisms for some information to be withheld from public access.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's Ross, what do you think about that?
I'd have to think about it.
Okay. Well, in any case, I think we can take this offline and address it on the list.
I have one more, just if you don't mind, because if I get called into my meeting.
Yeah, go ahead. Okay.
It's the point on page 25. You respond Ross's comment on related to page 25.
Mm-hmm.
There have been lots of statements from both sides. One, a lot of our concern is that it's we need to increase overall data accuracy. And then there has been this statement from the NCUC and I believe Ross that if you enhance privacy that you'll get more accurate data. But I haven't actually received any actual research that demonstrates that. So I think both of us are making statements.
Actually, if I could interject, the data that I'm referring to lies with the Edelman studies and other research that we were given at the beginning of this task force.
Well, I don't even remember it. It was so long ago. What does that say?
Basically, that some registrants, specific registrants, will provide false data no matter what the privacy option is. That was basically the summary of the Edelman study.
And that was from Edelman?
Yeah.
I don't recall it.
So regardless, I think Ross's change is actually probably correct, though, the surmise as opposed to indicated, and I think, David, you might be correct. There might be other places where we'd want to be equally cautious about our words if we, if there's similar indications about how things might work from the other side. But Steve, you were going to comment?
Yeah, this is Steve. Could I?
Yeah, go ahead.
I think, I mean, since the question is what verb to use, I don't think that the IPC would necessarily associate itself with this statement either. This came up because the question was asked about whether the special circumstances proposal addresses the accuracy issue, and I believe my response was some people would think so because we keep hearing that some people provide false data because there isn't a privacy option. So I don't, I mean, that's not the IPC position. I would agree with Ross that some people would provide false data no matter what the privacy option is concerned. So I'm happy to have that dropped, that sentence about the IPC.
Right. So would, does that address everyone's concern if we just remove that sentence?
Yeah, that would satisfy me too.
Ross? Yeah, it's mislabeled on page 25. It's actually page 29 for those of us following it along at home.
So, Ross, is dropping that sentence address your concern?
Sure, yeah.
This is Avery. Can I say something?
Yeah, go ahead, Avery.
I basically am hearing things listed as contradictory statements that aren't. I think that the statements that say some people will give more accurate data if there's a privacy option can be simultaneously true while you're saying, and to some people it won't matter at all. And so I don't think we have contradictory statements. But we're treating them as if they have a contradictory statement.
Yeah, so I think...
right, this is Wendy. Given that I do believe that at least some people will use inaccuracy as a means of protecting privacy and will therefore give more accurate data if there is privacy, I don't see the reason to remove it entirely, just to make it less categorical.
Maybe we should just say that some task force members surmised.
Right. Maybe that's a reasonable.
I think it's further than that. I think there's anecdotal evidence, at least. Perhaps we need other evidence. But it's not just some task force members' belief.
Well, I think it would be useful. So Aubrey, to this point, I think, why don't we also agree to maybe take this offline, and if there's a reference that we could include that took it beyond some task force members?
Look, I'll say I am one person who would provide more accurate data if that's all it requires to say.
Wendy, let's not lose sight of the context in which that comment is made, because it's made as an excuse for the special circumstances proposal, and which I don't believe is going to change the overall state of accuracy in any way, shape, or form. I would tend to agree with your statements, generally speaking, anecdotally speaking.
So I think some task force. So here's what I'm going to propose. I'm going to propose we also take this offline. I think we've heard the range of viewpoints here. I think if there's some reference to make it sort of more inclusive than some task force members, including Wendy, think that it might alter behavior, then I think we could add that. But otherwise, some task force members surmise seems to be a simple middle ground here. So we're already running behind time, and I've declared my intention to be somewhat stickler for this, so I'm going to try to move through the discussion as rapidly as possible. Is there any other questions about concerns about Ross's proposed edits? Steve, do you have a comment?
Well, I had marked up Maria's text without... some of these were Ross's, may have been Ross's edits, and some of them hadn't.
Well, so why don't I had you next in the queue, so why don't I just move to you in any case?
One comment I had was on the background section, which I think is very very useful to have. But there were a couple of points there which I'd be glad to just deal with offline or with Maria. But one general observation was it might be useful if we can to include links to some of the past decisions or documents that are referenced there, so that if somebody wanted to go through it, they could actually get to the original document.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Wherever possible, we should trap by the references or links to things that we refer to.
Some of my other comments actually have to do with characterizations of the proposals, and I think you had wanted to leave those for later, or is this the time to raise them?
By characterizations of the proposals, what do you...
I'll give an example. On page 12, it says, describing the OPOC proposal, it says, the proposal envisages allowing registrants to use an OPOC in place of current administrative and technical contact details. Those last few words are Ross's edit, which I agree with, but my concern was I think it probably should say requiring registrants rather than allowing registrants, because as I understand it, OPOC would not be optional. You would designate an OPOC.
Right. Yeah. So that's correct. So are there, if the edits are sort of that nature, you know, a word here or a word there, I think we're probably best served by taking that offline, and we can probably the most efficient way to deal with it. Do you have any sort of like broader points about are there structural issues or issues along those lines that you think?
No, I think I've raised the structural concerns. Most of the others are fairly fairly small edits, but I'd be glad to send those separately.
Yeah, I think we should. It's so minor edits. I think we should just take to the list and probably work through most of it there. But it's much better to deal with as a written medium anyway.
Yeah.
Just to also to clarify, Steve, those edits that you pointed out were actually Maria's edits. So it's likely that you're working from her draft. In the draft that I circulated, I never accepted her edits, which means
right.
that both my edits and her edits are both underlined and highlighted. So it might be a bit confusing. There is a different file name for the file that I included my edits in. So it's draft 2 with registrar comments .doc.
Okay. So any other last minute questions or comments about the report proper? Okay, if not, we're gonna move right on to a discussion, our second topic on the agenda today, which is discussion of how to access data that is not published. And specifically speaking, I think in the context of, and I made a proposal over the last week that apparently was not clear in this regard, but I think we're specifically talking about data that is removed, that's currently available in WHIS, that's removed as a result of our policy recommendations. So in the case of the OPOC proposal, it would be, for example, the registrant contact, like the registrant mailing address. In the case of the special circumstances proposal, we'd be talking about data that a registrant had essentially opted out or had provided their special circumstances description and their data was no longer provided in the WHIS. We're talking about access to that data, not about getting access to random other bits of data that the registrar has available but part of the WHIS system today or in the... So to that end, so far we've had two proposals along these lines, I think. One is the proposal that I put forward last week, and the other proposal is Ross's proposal, which I don't think we have a written form for, but it's basically that you should get in touch with the registrar. Am I right, Ross,
it's status quo.
Yeah,
you
status
know,
quo.
Nothing changes, yeah.
So if you need access to the data, then you ask the registrar and work with them to get it. And I guess you would also have sort of legal mechanisms available to you as well if you want to employ those.
Right. And you know, to be clear around that, the offer still stands that if we need to define what status quo looks like for the benefit of the task force, that's an exercise that we can undertake.
Okay. And so am I correct? Have we seen any other proposals along on this topic?
Well, Jordan, this is Steve. I just wanted to ask where your hybrid tiered access proposal might fit in here, because in a sense this is also about how you gain access to data that is not available to the general public.
Yeah, so my hybrid tiered access actually sort of let's just address that in the next agenda item, but it incorporates by reference whatever we resolve on this topic as well, I think, because there might be a way to get additional data beyond what you get in the sort of middle tier through contract. So I will briefly, I think we've heard the brief synopsis of Ross's idea. I'll briefly re-summarize my idea as well, and then maybe we can have some discussion on this point. My idea essentially is that that there is an explicit mechanism in order to get access to any data that's removed, and that mechanism would be essentially that if you see a domain name where one of two circumstances applied, then you would be able to request data. The first circumstance is where the reason that the data was removed is no longer valid. This would be most applicable in something like my hybrid tiered idea or the special circumstance proposal, where there's some basis for removing data, or even in the sort of edit that I proposed to the special circumstance proposal where any individual using a domain for non-commercial purposes could have their whois data removed. If someone came along and saw in that case that the that it was being used for commercial purposes, they could raise an objection. You know, they could ask to get access to the whois data on the basis that a reason for the whois data being removed was no longer valid. The second reason that you could request data would be that you essentially the domain was being used for a bad purpose, and the language I used, I think, was being used for an illegal purpose or to jeopardize the security or stability of other internet resources, or to harm the security or stability of other internet resources. And if that's the case, the second condition has to be met, which is that essentially this data is required in order to address the issue. So there's no better source of data that already exists. So I gave the example of a DOS attack was originating from a particular IP address that happened to be referenced by a domain name. This route would only apply if you for some reason the IP address whois didn't exist or wasn't applicable for some reason. So in any case, if you think you have a circumstance in which either of these two scenarios apply, you can submit a document or some sort of request saying I need access to this data. You create a prima facie case for why you're meeting the circumstances to get the data. This goes to a third party, and I copied this third party idea from Steve fairly much. Some sort of neutral group that is capable of evaluating these requests. They respond in some timely manner. I've proposed 3 business days, I think, in my initial proposal. And then if they say yes, then you get access to your data. The caveat being at the time that the initial request is made, the registrant would be notified that the request was made, and they would have the option any time up until the 3 days had passed, I guess, and the request was granted, that instead of having their information made available, they could just delete the registration instead. And in that case, the information wouldn't be released. So I think that's the short synopsis of my idea. So I'm open to questions on my idea or to Ross. But why don't we start with, first of all, if there are questions of clarification on either of the proposals, and if not, we'll move to some substantive discussion. Okay, no questions. So we will, do people have comments about either or both approaches in terms of which they might support?
Yeah, actually I would have a question to your proposal.
Oh, go ahead, Tom.
Well, it's pretty much the same question I raised via email. The first thing is, who do you think should do that, and how valuable do you think that vetting process would be? I mean, everybody can provide you with a minute with certain documentation and to prove that he needs the data he doesn't get anywhere else. So that's a tough call, actually, on anyone to make a judgment on that, you know, whether that's a good reason for giving out private data or not. The other one is that if you find someone who's actually willing to do that and go through that risk, because he's not going to do it for nothing, so there's a cost factor to it, and I wonder how you want to raise the money for someone doing that.
Sure. So to answer your first question, I don't have anyone particularly in mind. I think that I think you're right that it's not necessarily a trivial task. Especially given that I've included this concept of illegality, and that could vary a lot from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. I think that raises it also raises the burden somewhat in terms of providing the prima facie case. Because the person that wanted the who is information would have to demonstrate, you know, whatever law they thought was being broken and provide the evidence of it.
Especially, for example, spam is not regarded as a crime in Germany right now.
Right.
So, and I doubt that it is in the States. I don't know about that Can-Spam Act, but it might be different all over the world.
Yeah, so I agree with that. I think issues like spam, I think a lot of issues would actually also fall into the security and stability of other Internet resources category, since spam often uses a lot of innocent third parties along the way. And I think that second category may be the easier one to prove. But in any case, I agree it's sort of a hard job. I don't have anyone particularly in mind at this time as a good candidate to perform the task. But I think it's probably some reasonable party could be identified to do it. And as for financing it, my idea is the same as I stole this from Steve as well, which is that ICANN has all these various streams of revenue right now for recurring revenue from domain names, and they should tap into one of those streams to pay for it.
So, Jordan, I've got a couple questions for you.
Yeah, go ahead, Rob.
You've built a presumption of... Actually, where do I want to start? Let me start with the first principles instead. What is our goal with this particular policy? In other words, which criticisms of the current state is it attempting to address?
The goal of the policy is to address the goal of drafting it was purely based the initial goal was purely based on addressing one of our terms of reference items.
But what about the current state is this particular proposal addressing? Which aspects are you trying to improve upon?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that the only potential improvement I might see here would be some notion of predictability or consistency. Predictability or consistency of whether or not, for both the registrant and for the querier. So the registrant would have some notion that their data wasn't going to be released unless it did something bad, and the requester would have some predictability about, you know, they wouldn't have to worry one registrar might behave one way and another registrar might behave another.
Okay. You've built a presumption of guilt into the release of the data. In other words, that the resource is being used for illegal purposes. Does that imply that you're waiting for some sort of legislative outcome before the data is going to be released?
No, I don't think there's a presumption of there's not a presumption of guilt. Unless the prima facie case is built, then the data wouldn't be released.
But you're making a very explicit statement that that if the domain is being used in an illegal manner, that means that laws are specifically being broken, which typically requires a court of law to contemplate before there's any such designation of guilt or non-guilt. So.
Well, so I mean, keep in mind this is an initial draft that I wrote
yep.
in half an hour, so I think there's probably some wording that could address that concern. But the idea is that yes, if there's a law that is being broken, that
but according to whom?
According to the third party evaluator, not to the leader.
So it's the contention of the law is being broken that would cause the release of the data?
No, it's the evaluation of the third party. Evaluator that it's being broken.
And that would be a non-judiciary body or a judiciary
That's right.
body?
It would be non-judiciary body.
Okay. And that would, okay. All right.
Think of it sort of like maybe binding arbitration.
Well, no, I kind of think of it as my rights being infringed, but...
Well, nonetheless, there's models where sort of legal matters are settled outside of the legal.
Yeah, but in, well, yeah, okay. In most democratic regimes, guilt comes after innocence, after the presumption of innocence. But with the there's also a side effect that's built into this, that when your example around the DDoS effect or the DDoS case,
mm-hmm.
If you're dealing with this in a shared hosting environment, DDoS coming from one of those servers would come from a specific IP address, which would have the side effect of unlocking the data for every single host name associated with that IP address. So you may want to...
So that's actually why I included the requirement to be that this has to be the best source of information for it. So if there's a better source of information, like the IP address registry, then the request would be denied on that basis.
Right, but if the data isn't available through that resource, then this is the fallback, and that would be an inappropriate fallback.
Okay. Any other questions about this?
No, I don't think so, not specifically.
Jordan, this is Steve. Could I get in the queue?
Yeah, go ahead.
A couple of points. One, hark back to something that was said a few minutes ago. I think it would be useful to have something down in writing about the status quo, if that's one of the alternatives, because we may not all agree on what the status quo is. Second, I appreciate that this has some similarities to the special circumstances proposal. I do think that the issues that this third-party adjudicator or decision-maker, whatever you want to call it, would be asked to address would be more difficult than the issues that the similar party would be asked to address in the special circumstances proposal. I think Ross has asked some good questions about that, and Tom has pointed out that in some areas it isn't clear from one place to another what's illegal activity. And I guess my third point is that one thing that this proposal lacks, is a kind of an emergency mechanism. This, I think, calls for, you suggested maybe within 3 business days, but there certainly needs to be some, if you have somebody evaluating the specifics of each case, it certainly would require some time. And this is why I thought that this is an area where your other proposal actually would fit in better. Which was that entities could, in effect, pre-qualify for this. At least for an entity that had thought it through in advance and had gone and either gotten its password or you suggested some other mechanisms in your hybrid tiered access proposal, all of which I think are worth discussing. But an entity that had gotten its password or otherwise gotten its credential would essentially be able to get this information very quickly. And that's, I think, one shortcoming of the proposal about the access to data proposal you put forward, is there doesn't seem to be any way to get data faster than 3 business days, and that's sometimes necessary.
Right. So just to address that last concern, I think that I thought about that quite a bit. I think that I actually don't think that there's – I can't think of a better mechanism. I think that the pre-qualifying is useful for in some circumstances. Within the context of the tiered access proposal, I think it's somewhat reasonable, assuming that there's a third – there is an additional sort of opt-out layer. I think for getting access to data that's truly been designated as sensitive for some reason – that it would be, I'd be a little bit more concerned about having a pre-qualification route there. So having said that, I think there is some pretty good status quo mechanisms for dealing with short-term effects of attacks or issues like that. I think there is a faster path as well. I mean, I think in some cases it may be that the legal process might provide a faster path. Dealing directly with registrars or other entities might provide a faster path, maybe for at least getting rid of the attack or bad action while it's happening. But I don't think it's as you point out, this is going to require some research. So I don't think leaving the requirement in place that the request is actually evaluated, I don't think shortening it further for an emergency request is really feasible. So I didn't have a direct way to deal with it. I personally don't think that the that the contract layer is sufficient to deal with all the circumstances. So that's why I didn't include a sort of emergency bypass here.
Actually, Jordan, I had one other question according to my notes, so whenever you get a chance to slot me in, I'm sorry.
Yes, Steve, do you have any
other questions? I was just going to respond. I think you took on a very challenging assignment here, and I think it is hard to design a system that will work both for something like OPOC and for something like special circumstances. I'd agree with you that someone who's already been through the special circumstances filter, you know, you may want to have a different approach. I think the approach you suggest here, or rather the pre-qualification approach for tiered access may make more sense in the OPOC setting where there's a much more data that is not publicly accessible.
Right. So yeah, the idea was that this proposal is actually designed to work with
yeah.
either of my other two proposals, not necessarily. It could probably be tweaked a little bit to work with the other proposals, but the main intent was to work with either of the first two proposals. Go ahead, Ross.
Yeah, it was the money question. You're proposing that funds be set aside for administering the release of this data. Somehow, as if you know, ICANN's got an unlimited supply of money. I'm just wondering which aspects of the budget are you looking to set aside to fund this, or would this be additional cash that would be collected from registrants?
No, so it wouldn't involve additional cash. I don't think ICANN has an unlimited amount of money, but I think they have a limited but not trivial amount of money available to them. And I think based on recent funding changes, it seems to me that they have more than enough to fulfill their current functions as well as set aside some money for this as well.
Have you done an analysis to support that contention? Or?
Without having details about who would know, I haven't. Like, put that more.
You know, in fairness, Jordan, I would have exactly the same criticism of the special circumstances proposal in that the likely event is that this will either displace existing budgeted efforts or will more likely just come across in the form of an additional tax.
Can I ask a question on that? This would be an additional tax on registrants?
No, so
ultimately, yeah.
Right, so in other words, we're basically charging registrants for more of their data to be available.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice. Okay, thank you.
Right, although this proposal does not directly call for an increase in funding.
Yeah, I think the exchange Aubrey and I had was more special circumstances related than it was to your proposal, Jordan. I do apologize.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I think that I just wanted to be clear that I think that applies to Steve's proposal as well. It may be that some analysis would find that it would require additional funding. I don't think that analysis has been done one way or the other.
Actually, I think, and this is Aubrey again, I actually think that the registrants paying more for their data be available, whether it's in this notion of tiered or in special circumstances, holds just about the same, given that no matter how much money ICANN has, extra expense would be eventually turned into extra fee.
Well,
it's just one of the laws of charging things.
Well, so that actually depends on whether or not the fees are passed on in a way that for example, some of the fees structure that ICANN has in place right now applies in places where there are fee caps. So a fee is passed to a part of it, then has a fee cap imposed on them. That's becoming more and more rare, but in those particular cases, there's no way that those costs would be passed on to the registrant.
This is Steve. As far as the special circumstances proposal is concerned, I just wanted to emphasize that the proposal is that this would come out of existing fees that are volume-sensitive fees that are already charged to registrants and registrars. To registrars and registries. I hear Ross's surmise that this would lead to that would not be sufficient, and there would be a need for other charges to be made.
Steve, it's actually a very specific statement that I'm making there, so I want to be clear to make sure I'm being heard right. It will do one of two things. It will either displace items in the current budget or will lead to additional fees being levied. It has to be one of those two things. I don't think that there's a surplus in the budget lying around to magically fund programs like this. So unless there is, it has to be one of those other two conditions, and that's a fact.
No, I hear you, and I think the first one there may well be better things. This may well be something better to spend ICANN's resources on than some of the other things it spends it on. I think this is basically to protect the privacy of people who have a special need for it. I think we went to some lengths to make sure in our proposal that registrants are not charged for this. Obviously,
the money has
comes
to, well,
out
the money
of registrars,
has to come from somewhere,
comes
right?
out of registries. Yes, potentially that could be that would have that effect, but we don't think that. At least our proposal was that, unlike the current situation where people who want to proxy registration, or anybody who wants a proxy registration can have it if they pay for it, and you can purchase a degree of anonymity. We think this is something that they ought to be able to get if they have the special circumstances that justify it, and that they shouldn't be charged for it.
Right, okay, so we actually don't have a particularly large amount of data on this point, and I think we understand various surmises that have taken place, But to Ross's initial point, I haven't done a study on this. I don't know whether a surplus exists or how much this would cost. I think that's probably true of special circumstances as well. I'm inclined to agree with Steve. I think it's probably, even if it's true that ICANN doesn't have a surplus, it's probably true that there's some less worthy programs out there that I wouldn't be too sad if this displaced one of those.
I guess it would be unlikely to actually consider that the intellectual property of the interest actually starts footing the bill for some of these programs, Jordan.
Brought it down.
Well, I think, Ross, if you wanted to propose alternative funding mechanisms,
okay,
that
cool.
Glad to consider them.
I would love to propose that. I will take that as a challenge and write something up for our next meeting.
Okay.
Ross, sorry, it's Maria here. I couldn't quite hear what you were actually going to take and write
on. I'm going to write up a proposal in which I'm going to write up a proposal for dealing with some of the additional fees associated with these proposals.
Okay, we're once again running behind schedule, but do we have further, people have comments about, do they like, well, we really only have two choices at this point, status quo or the proposal I put forward, so.
This is Steve. Again, I think if Ross is taking on assignments, if he could write up the status quo, that would also be helpful, too, so we would know what the two alternatives are.
Yeah, Ross, I think we've talked about this in the past. Is that, can you take that action item on?
Well, pursuant to, I'm not going to, I suppose so, but... somehow I get the feeling that status quo is not being considered as an alternative. I'm not going to blow my brains out documenting something that's not going to be looked at.
If
I can get some sense from
the
group as to how desirable that option actually is, I might be more inclined to actually spend some serious time on it.
Maybe we could get some feedback from other people about which approach they think is better.
This is Avery. Put me in a queue, please.
Yeah, Avery, anyone else? Okay, go ahead, Avery.
Okay. On most things, I don't support the status quo, but in terms of people who have need for information beyond what is available or beyond what is made available following the current practices, I'm definitely in favor of that.
Okay. Any...
basically, they're governed by the law of their country.
And what the registrars are willing to enter into.
Within that law. I mean, right. If the law of the country says registrars have to give them every bit of information they have, then that's what the registrars will do. If the registrars are told by the government that, we are liable for any information we get from you, for example, the way it happens in some European countries, then that's what they'll do. But the laws of the government in the individual places determine what the registrars can do. And then, yes, within their willingness determines that, but, yeah.
Right. Okay.
This is Steve. I'm not sure that's an accurate description of the status quo, but that's why I think it would be useful to have a write-up. I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be Ross, but he raised this. I think it would be good to have a write-up of what the status quo is.
Okay. Any other thoughts about desirability of a status quo or my proposal?
If I might amend the action item slightly, Jordan, what I'm going to do is document what my organization does.
Okay.
I'm not going to attempt to document what the other 200 or so operational registrars do. I think if we move beyond the discussion of status quo from its current state into a more serious consideration, that we could undertake the development of a larger study, but I don't think that it's realistic to assign it to me and expect to have it done by next week if we're dealing with any more than one registrar.
Sure. So Ross, do you think in the broader scheme, if we were going with the status quo option, if it would be reasonable to drop something that resembled like a best practices document or something like that?
Absolutely.
Further comments on this?
If what I said is considered to be not status quo, I can certainly write it up and enter it as a proposal.
I think that's fairly consistent with the status quo. Is what Aubrey described earlier your impression of the status quo?
I think so.
Just Steve was indicating it might not be, so if it needed to be written up as a specific proposal, I'm more than willing to do that.
Why don't we try to get at least the first pass from Ross?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
As a further discussion point. Okay, well, so it seems like we don't have a lot of other discussion on this, and I want to move on to our last topic area, unless anyone has a burning point they want to make here. Okay, so in our last topic area, we have a bunch of what we'll call other proposals. I'm going to try to, I think the first one I want to talk about briefly is what Aubrey had emailed to the list, which was the idea of amending the OPOC proposal to remove essentially all registrant data. Would that be a fair synopsis, Aubrey?
Yeah.
And so only the dates and technical information and the OPOC contact information.
Yeah.
Right. So I think I can guess what the responses to this will be. Are there people have unique concerns on this? One point I think, Aubrey, we've discussed in the past that maybe we can start with is how do you anticipate something like UDRP would work in this scenario, given that UDRP requires us, as part of the prima facie case you have to make as part of your UDRP, is that the existing registrant doesn't have any rights to the name? How would you know whether or not the registrant would have rights to the name in filing your UDRP?
You go to the OPOC and, you know, basically you go through the OPOC for all information. It's not that you cannot reach the registrant, that you can reach the registrant, and you can go through the OPOC to reach the registrant. I mean, the name, you know, the name itself, if it's a corporation hiding behind a shield, doesn't tell you that much either. It's only when it's an individual that the name becomes at all significant. So you've got the OPOC as your point of contact to get all information.
Sure. In some cases, you can imagine the name, if even like a corporation, would be helpful if it was like if it was Apple Computer suing Apple or filing a UDRP against Apple Core, they might decide it wasn't really a very good case. They could see that information.
Yes, but if it was Authy's, hidden domain limited, it would be nothing.
Okay.
So it's an inconsistent bit of information at best. It really only hurts individuals. And you've got the OPOC as your point of entrance to all information that's needed.
Okay. Other questions or comments about this proposal?
Yeah, I would like to comment, Jordan, please.
Yeah, go ahead, Ben.
I've made comments on this point in the past regarding whether or not this task force can actually move the ball forward. I don't think, having even made contrary statements as recently as this weekend, I don't think going back on the compromises that we've made are actually the best use of our time at this point. You know, the compromises have been made. I think it would be bad faith for us to withdraw those, and I think we should just move forward. If Steve wishes to pursue his alternative proposal, that's great, but, you know, I think it's important that we keep those concessions in there.
Thanks, Ross. Any other comments about this? Does everyone else like it, or does everyone else just think that it's not worth commenting on?
Well, this is Steve. I would not think this would be a good thing, and in the examples that were given about UDRP, you know, maybe you have an individual whose name is the same as that of a trademark, and it would be useful to know whether, you know, John McDonald has registered McDonald's.net or whatever it is. That would certainly be a factor that might well make a UDRP case less attractive and save time and money for everybody. So I think there is an advantage to having this information available.
Thanks, Steve. Any other comments about this? Okay, let me ask, is there anyone other than Aubrey that's supporting this proposal at this time? Okay. So sorry.
Sorry, which proposal are we talking about?
I bet Wendy supports it. It's Aubrey's proposal to remove all of the registrant information from the OPOC.
I would support including that as a sort of further clarification or additional proposal. It doesn't sound as though everybody wants to move one proposal or the other in that direction, but I certainly would support including that as an alternative.
Right. Well, I'll see if there's some reasonable way to incorporate it in the report. This is another idea that was proposed that didn't have a lot of support.
I guess I would add this.
Yeah, go ahead, Wendy, and then I'll read.
In terms of the registrant name, I suppose it would be, it might be worth adding a note that it's always been possible to use the registrant name as the domain name itself. You know, nothing requires that you incorporate an organization in order to have a domain name, and so therefore the registrant name on myseltzer.org domain is seltzer.org, the organization that runs the domain name.
Right.
And that, you know, tends to provide a do-it-yourself way of keeping names out of the who is.
Thanks, Wendy. Aubrey?
Okay, yeah, there's two things. One, there's obviously not strong support since there's no constituency. I was just wondering, is NCC on the phone call?
Yeah, I don't think they are.
Okay. The other thing is, if the name is necessary, and I do understand what Ross is saying about not going back on compromises, even if they're sort of obviated by proposals that are counter the compromise. I'm wondering whether there's sort of a dividing question here where, okay, if the name is deemed as necessary for UDRP, is the national origin also necessary?
Yeah.
So there's two different issues, and I've heard reasons for why the name might be necessary or at least make UDRP easier. So it's easier to go after Mr. McDonald. But I don't know, therefore, why the nationality would be necessary for that.
So I think the basis for including the nationality was to allow the extent that it is used by various people, like law enforcement or whoever, are looking at this to see whether or consumer protection groups are looking to see whether they have jurisdiction over a particular domain name, that the nationality was useful in that respect. I actually see much less of a privacy issue with the nationality than with the name. So, Aubrey, what's the concern with exposing that information?
The more identifiers you have on a person, because this is this is information that's relative to the person.
Right,
Joe McDonald somewhere in the world is one thing. To say that it's Joe McDonald in Sweden is another, and then if you have, and every bit of information you add, you more closely identify the target.
Okay. So I'm going to try to wrap this up in the next minute or two, but any further comments on this notion of jurisdiction? Or country being released? Any different opinions about this than about the other topic?
Well, to that point, I would like to hear from the intellectual property community what the need for that data is. I don't. If it's useful, and this is something we'd agreed to previously, we should try and honor that. But if it's not useful, if it's just icing on a cake, as it were, maybe we should consider taking it out.
So I think actually this came mostly from our discussion with various governmental representatives, I don't know, Steve or others from the IPC or other constituents. Do you have a view on this?
I'm sorry, I was on mute. Yeah, I think you're right that this is primarily a concern raised by the government enforcement agencies, but yes, I think it would be it is useful to have it because, again, as in the previous example I gave, there may be cases where you don't initiate a UDRP because you don't have rights in that country anyway, or because the person might have a claim of legitimate rights in the name, as in the example I gave. I'm not giving instances where it makes it easier to pursue a UDRP. I'm giving instances where it may make it unnecessary or inadvisable to pursue the UDRP. So I'm talking about instances where a dispute doesn't get raised in the first place. And I think that would certainly be true with regard to the nationality or the jurisdiction of the registrant. It also is relevant in UDRP because one of the options that someone has if they are not happy with the UDRP outcome is that they can bring a lawsuit in the preferred jurisdiction, which is either the jurisdiction of the registrar or the jurisdiction of the registrant. So again, it's useful to know what the jurisdiction of the registrant is.
And when the word jurisdiction is used, is that at a national level, at a state level, at a local level? What's meant by that statement?
In the current draft, it's state and...
So it's... okay. And what's the difference between state and national from a kind of a legal and a privacy perspective?
So I'm not sure I think it's the same concern that Avery raised from a privacy perspective. The more information you have, the more potentially useful it is in identifying someone. From a legal perspective, I think it's mostly useful in the United States, probably other places where it's quite useful.
Maybe let me ask the question a different way. Is the national level a decent place to draw the line? Is that a fair middle ground for everybody's concerns?
Well, I think it's more important to know the nationality than the province or state, but again, it's more information about whether you have the rights in that jurisdiction and also whether you're going to be needing to face a lawsuit in that jurisdiction if the registrant is unhappy with the outcome of a UDRP, just to use that example.
Steve, are there examples of rights being limited on a provincial or state basis?
Well, certainly trademark is territorial. If you don't have a registered trademark that has national effect, it may only be it may be registered in a particular state. You may have the exclusive right to use that mark in connection with your product or service, but only in certain parts of the United States. And I don't know the extent to, obviously some other countries do have federal systems, and I don't know the extent to which the same be true in some other countries.
Okay, Jordan, can I make another comment?
Me too, please.
Go ahead, Avi, then Tom, and then we're going to have to wrap up this conversation.
Right, let me go after Tom.
Okay, go ahead, Tom.
Well, the only concern I have is that we have to find a common denominator, or the smaller one. And for example, the state concept you just referred to in the States is not known, even though we have a federal system in Germany. And I don't know why we should grant an exception to certain people and not to others. So saying if you have an Italian where I don't know what kind of system to have, it would probably just put in there Italy. I don't know if you have any state provinces or whatsoever, or the Ghana, for example. So why should you treat any state who have that kind of setup differently, and in that case worse than someone from a state who doesn't have such a setup? That kind of seems strange to me. You have to say, on one hand, okay, it's Tom Keller, Germany, and on the other hand, it would be Tom Keller, Indiana, U.S. You know, that kind of doesn't strike me as a balance, actually.
Okay. Thanks, Tom. Go ahead, Avi.
Okay, yeah. I guess in listening to the conversation, one thing heartens me in that the IPC folks still consider the original OPOC proposal worth, you know, defending in a sense. And, you know, yeah, perhaps Ross is right. Perhaps we should just, you know, leave things as they are, leave the compromises in it, even though those that sort of we made the compromise with put in an opposing proposal, and I withdraw.
Okay, thanks, Ari. That maybe simplifies things somewhat. So I'm actually going to move on then to next. Let's maybe deal with the so Steve, I'm going to make a caveat up front. I think we got your revision relatively late, so we may not have time to address it today, but we'll make sure to at least get some time on the next call for it.
Okay.
And so I'm going to, but we've already started some discussion on List on it, so I'm going to hope that we can maybe have some additional discussion on List about all of these things. So I'm going to go to the first of the two proposals I made. Actually, this relates, I guess, Steve, to your proposal, which is essentially changing the criteria under which the special circumstances apply, so they include essentially any individual that is not using their domain for commercial purposes. Steve, I think you've already indicated you think that this overly broadens the proposal, but I'd like to see if there's other discussion on whether or not people think this is useful and useful direction to pursue with regards to the perhaps finding some common ground on the special circumstances.
Jordan, I'm kind of unclear what exactly we're talking about. Right?
So we're talking about the first, I think, proposal I sent out, which was change the special circumstances proposal, so that you can essentially use special circumstances mechanism if you are an individual and you're using your domain name for non-commercial purposes, or if you're an entity that falls into the existing criteria that you've decided, which basically means that someone might hunt you down and kill you.
Okay.
Okay, so maybe, are there any questions about this proposal? Let's start with that.
Beyond those, like, table on the list, you mean?
What was your question on the list, Ross? Sorry.
I guess the main question I would have at this point, to kind of summarize some of the criticism and questions into a question, would be whether or not it would just be simpler to rewrite the entire proposal as a more rigorous implementation of the status quo. I don't see the exceptions being made as being very meaningful. So if the real proposal is to simply eliminate proxy services and make it mandatory for everyone to publish their data, it may be easier for us to just state that and move on.
Okay, so you're talking about Steve's revised draft, is that
yep.
right? Yeah, so I'm trying not to talk about that right now.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
And
sorry,
to talk just about the amendment that I had proposed, which I think you had actually said you liked, which was to change the criteria for the
I'm sorry.
Proposal. To include just any individual that was using the domain for non-commercial. So let me actually, Ross, maybe put you on the spot and ask if it is if there was a broader reading of the special circumstances proposal along those lines, does that seem useful to you? Is it worth discussing that further, or do you still use that sort of as a distraction to the main line of conversation with the OPOC?
But you're assuming that simply stating you're going to put me on the spot is actually going to do so. I'm still looking for the email that you're referring to. So.
Okay.
Can
so
I
I'm
ask
not going to let
question?
You do that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Can I ask a question? Yeah. So adding more individuals now, does that mean that it's sufficient for them to opt out to merely say, I'm a non-commercial individual, or does that still have to go through some committee review that sort of investigates you by some or puts some burden of proof on you to prove that you're a non-commercial individual?
Right. So the way I had proposed it is the only thing it does is changes the criteria. So you it would still go to the third-party evaluator.
Right. And you still have the burden of proof.
Yeah, I suppose that would be the case. But here, all you have to prove is that you're an individual and that you're not using your domain for commercial purposes.
How do you prove that?
Say, look at my domain. There's nothing for sale on it. I mean,
But I'd have questions. For example, if a professional puts their resume on it, is that for sale?
Well, right, so I think we would need to define commercial purposes probably a little bit more.
Right, because anybody can put their resume on saying, you know, I'm looking for a job. Does that constitute selling oneself? I mean, I tend to think it does, but...
So my
Wendy, if I could jump in with a follow-up.
Sure. My view in drafting the proposal was that by commercial purposes, I would mean that you're engaging in some sort of trade on your website. Go ahead, Wendy.
I would be maybe I would suggest that if we could say primarily commercial purposes, that would be a more meaningful help to non-commercial entities. But I think of all of the folks who are running political websites, who put up T-shirts for sale to fund their hosting charges, or who have Google AdWords to try to pay for the cost of running the site, and courts have gotten confused into calling some of those things commercial activity. I would hate to think that we were saying none of those people was entitled to privacy because they were trying to pay the costs of running a popular website.
Yeah, so let's be clear. My proposal is, you know, like three sentences long, so it can certainly be interpreted as a starting point rather than a destination, and further thoughts about how to improve it, I'd be more than willing to entertain them.
Yeah, I guess those inquiries are what sort of pushes me toward against requiring people to justify at all their privacy concerns.
You can put me back in the spot any time now, Jordan.
I'll take
my spot in the spot queue.
Jordan, this is Steve. Could I get in the queue?
Yeah, I want to get in the queue. So.
Russ, Steve, Tom. Go ahead, Russ.
Yeah, what we're talking about is the difference between versus opt-in and opt-out here.
Right.
And I think broadening opt-out is a noble goal. And, you know, I was being extremely sarcastic and cynical when I suggested that this was a good idea, Jordan, that, you know, we're making this way more onerous than getting an unlisted phone number. So if, A, we assume that opt-out is the way to go, which I completely don't believe that it is, it shouldn't be any more onerous than opting out of a telephone directory. So I think that if we are going to consider opting out, it will need to be much broader and more convenient than this amendment or any of the other amendments that I've heard would actually allow for.
Is it the burden of proof that makes this more inconvenient?
Yeah.
Okay. Steve and then Tom.
Yeah, on the issue of non-commercial, I'd agree this is can be a complicated question, and our proposal is that this would be one of the specific criteria that would be worked out by a working group prior to this new system coming into place. But I wonder if people, I recognize there are issues about what constitutes commercial activity, and I wonder if people would be more comfortable if that criterion were simply taken out of the special circumstances proposal. So it would not be an issue, it would not be something you would have to prove that you were making a non-commercial use. You would have to prove that you had the security need to have privacy, but non-commercial would not enter into it, and that would not also that would not be something that the third-party vendor would adjudicate. So I throw that out as a possibility because there's, you know, I hear what people are saying about the difficulty of determining whether use is non-commercial, and particularly when it's registrant and they haven't made any use of it yet.
Right. I would imagine that would actually make proving the case quite a bit easier at that point. But in any case, Tom, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm pretty much the same. Well, the same line as Ross's. I mean, we shouldn't think about this opting out, but rather, what about just opting in into a privacy service instead of that people that someone can or has to be opted out of it. So I don't really like that person is first going through the registration process. As a private person, afterwards, he still has to prove that he is a private person. That kind of strikes me strange because most of the persons don't even know about the WHO system in that way, and they have to give out their data to others and to the public without really know about that. I know that might come down to that we have to inform the people a little bit better as we do right now, but if you have a look at registries that already have implemented such a thing, we have already some experience with Nominat that is giving out co.uk domains where every private individual in the ordering process can opt out of the WHOIS if he's private, and if some claims are coming out that person is using such site for commercial businesses, Nominat itself is having a check on that and deciding whether it is the case or not. But that is that a person is opting out at the beginning, and that would be a totally different setup to what is proposed as special circumstances, where you have to give your data on default, and then you might be able to opt out of the service. And if we kind of tweak on these, follow-up processes, you know, I would be kind of willing to think in that direction. So it should be the default option to be opted out as a private person, and then if there's proof against you, you can be opted in again.
Okay, so the bottom line is I'm not hearing a lot of support for this particular proposal. So,
well, actually, Jordan, there are changes that could be made. I don't know how popular those changes will be.
Well, so why don't I suggest this? If people have any further ideas on improving this or changing it, then feel free to contribute offline. But I want to move to the last proposal before we run out of time. And maybe weigh the relative level of interest. So let me jump real quickly. I have about 10 more minutes to the last proposal that I had put forward, which was, and Steve alluded to this earlier, which is essentially the son of tiered access. And the idea here is, I'll encapsulate it very quickly, that basically there's 2.5 tiers. The first tier is the publicly available information, and that is essentially mirrors what is proposed in the OPAC proposal. The second tier is anyone that agrees to contract not to use the information for bad purposes, and there's bad purposes to be defined. Unfortunately, that's a weakness in the current proposal, but anyone who contracts to not use the information for bad purposes will be able to access the information. To the registrant data, essentially the data that was removed by the OPAC proposal. And then there's sort of the half tier beyond that is I'm also incorporating Steve's special circumstances proposal with the more limited definition of safety and security concerns, that if you have specific concerns along those lines, then you can opt out of the system entirely, and in that case, your information isn't shown in either Tier 1 or Tier 2. It would be much like Steve and Steve's proposal. You just do the registrar information in that case. Okay, that's the proposal. Any questions about it?
Jordan, this is Steve. Does your proposal also incorporate, you had given three other alternatives in response to my scalability question, which I think were quite constructive and worth discussing as part of this too, which is basically, would there be a third party that certifies?
Yeah, so I think it would be most useful. So on further reflection, I think incorporating, my initial reaction would be to incorporate the third of the three alternatives that I proposed, but I'm open to discussion there. But essentially, there would be some central mechanism to contract, and that would give some ability to consistently get into registrar the protected tier without having to contract with individual. Any other questions? Okay, comments? Concerns, support, discuss? Anything?
Oh, yeah, it's me, it's Tom.
Yeah, go ahead, Tom.
Well, I already wrote one email, and I'm inclined to really like that proposal in a way that it is equally based so that the person who requests information is willing to reveal who he is actually to that person who holds the domain name, so that we know that the data is not misused and we can hold someone true for it. And besides that thing, I want to repeat what I said in that email, but that exactly the conclusions we discussed about 2 years ago. So I don't know if that if you really want to pick that up. Even though I like it, it would be a new concept we had to reintroduce to our constituency to have some discussion about that again there.
Right, and so that's essentially the set of principles that we got out of the initial Who Is Task Force 2, is that what you're...
Right, that was the outcome from Task Force 1 and the combined Task Force 1 and 2 after we iterated a couple of times.
Yes.
But we never really made a decision on it.
Sure, now that is some useful reading for consideration of anything that looks here, actually. So Tom, you're proposing like a further amendment essentially to my proposal, which is that when you request data, then your data is revealed to registrants. Okay.
Yeah, right. Unless there's a special reason to, then that would mean that you have a subpoena or something like that, and then you go directly to the registrar. I mean, we don't want to hinder any kind of legal process going on or that police investigations can't take place the way they should. But I guess in just a regular case of trying to find out who that person is because you want to sue him, it's just fear that that person gets that information before he actually did. In fact, a lot of people just retrieve data without having a certain solid means for that. So if you want to know my data, it's just fear that I get used. And it would be open to anyone who likes to contract. The only thing he would have to do is to send proof of his identity. So we would be down to some kind of an verification process similar to what we already see with SSL certificates, where a company can get a certificate by approving his ID via like a post-ident process or something like that.
Okay, thanks, Tom. Any other comments or... Let me ask, is this proposal useful at all? Is it helping us get any closer to some common ground, or do people not like it any better than the various proposals that are already out there?
Well, this is Steve. As I indicated, I thought it would be useful in a somewhat different context as far as gaining access to, and I think you are proposing it in a sense for gaining access to information that is not made publicly available, and I think that it is fruitful to discuss it if OPOC were the way that Who Is policy were to be changed. I think then we would want to know how would we get access to the to more complete data.
So well, let me ask Steve. Does this address the broad set of concerns you have with OPOC enough to get your constituency? You know, could this sort of hybrid model be supported by the IPC, or are you still going to say that you think a special circumstances proposal first, and then maybe if we decide to do the OPOC, then this might be a reasonable approach?
Well, it's certainly closer to the latter than the former. It's not. It is not going to change people's concerns about OPOC, but I think it does address a practical issue if OPOC were to be implemented about how else would you get access to some of this data. I will say with OPOC, there's not very much data we're talking about here. I guess we're only talking about the, if I'm not mistaken, we're only talking about the mailing address of the registrant here, right?
Yeah, I believe that's the case.
Well, we don't even have the mailing address of the registrant for most of the time. It's not required in the contract.
No, that is required right now.
The email address?
The mailing address.
Oh, the mailing, sorry, yeah.
Postal address.
Right.
So,
I mean, I think that puts this in context about how, you know, this is not talking about very much data, but I think it is useful to have to be thinking about how that data would be accessed.
Well, so I think, let me ask this. So Ross has proposed something in the past, which is if what we're getting caught up with the OPOC is the term OPOC as opposed to, like, leaving things admin in tech context. If this was phrased instead as OPOC revised with an admin in tech context, and then this layer to get access to the data. I guess my question is any barrier at all the concern of the IPC, or would this relatively low barrier to getting access to that second tier of data meet the concerns that you've raised?
No, I think the low barrier is a constructive suggestion. I think this is not just an IPC issue, because there's also needs for this in terms of combating fraud online and so forth. And there's law enforcement issues, which I suspect are going to be significant for this. But I do think that for the IPC, this is certainly worth further discussion if OPOC is going to go forward. And I do think it also could be adapted to work in a special circumstances environment. We had this discussion about that earlier on the call.
So I guess the bottom line that I'm trying to get, I don't think any of these proposals are particularly useful unless we're getting to the point that we can...
Jordan, can I comment?
Yeah, hold on one second.
Okay.
If we can somehow get to the point that we're getting closer to a consensus for the constituency, if we're going to end up with a proposal that three constituencies support and three don't support either way, I don't think these further discussion along any of these proposals seems that useful to me. We can already sort of have that discussion now and write up a report that says that already. So I guess I'm asking, do any of these proposals that we've discussed today get us any closer to a position that we think we could get sort of consensus in the entire task force around? But go ahead, Aubrey.
Okay, obviously I don't speak for any constituency, but to me I'd have pretty much the same issues with this proposal that I have with the alternative proposal, in terms of, you know, there's still something to be financed, it's still a procedure, it still lowers the barrier, I think, too much. So for me it would be many of the same issues, but obviously I don't speak for constituency.
Right.
So I don't see it bringing us closer.
Right. So this essentially, like, you don't think it goes far enough in terms of protecting privacy, and it sounds like Steve may not think it goes far enough in providing...
Exactly. I still fall down to the, you know, there's national laws that determine that, and the people that have the right to the data by national law can get it.
There's one question I would have, Edward. Do you think it would make the whole situation a bit better, at least?
The last couple words garbled. I didn't. Could you repeat?
Sure. Do you think it would make the situation any better at all? I mean, if it would change to such a scenario from the status quo, where everybody can have a look at the data, to a scenario where only people who have contracted and authenticated themselves can look at the data?
No, because I don't trust the people that only want to look at it for good reasons. So actually, I think that it only lets those who have money and attack on privacy look at it. And so one of the issues I get when I talk to people is that there are some individuals that do see some consumer value in seeing this data. So while I, for a privacy reason, I believe that trumps that and the data should be completely hidden, I do not subscribe to something where it only gives people who have power or money the right to see the data.
Okay. So I know we want to perhaps talk about this further, but we are out of time, and I'm sensitive to people's schedules. We haven't really resolved anything. What I'm going to propose is that if people do have ideas that they think might help bridge this gap, I'd certainly encourage further discussion about this on the list, or I'd be glad to talk about any of my proposals to people offline by telephone or however as well. And similarly, if people do have ideas, to try to bridge the gap. I think we'd be much better off as a task force and as part of the ICANN process to get to a point where we have some sort of working consensus, as opposed to another purpose of who is situation where we have two competing proposals. In this case, I don't think we'll end up with a tie. We do have a voting. Voting mechanism. I'm going to email out a voting mechanism today. But we will have a voting mechanism and an odd number of votes, I think, that will prevent a tie. So at the end of the process, I think we can probably end up with a majority and a minority view. But if that majority to minority is by one vote or something along those lines, I think that doesn't say great things about the outcomes and the way this process is working, I don't think. So, go ahead, David.
This is David Maher. I'd like to comment on that. The idea of voting to establish a position in this strikes me as the wrong way to go about it. We're supposed to find a consensus. This is a topic that was commented on extensively by the London School of Economics, and I object to the idea that a vote by the group involved in this task force has any meaning whatsoever. The fact is there's no consensus. I agree totally with what Aubrey said. I haven't commented in this meeting because other people are making the arguments that I would have made myself anyway. But there is very clearly a complete breakdown in consensus building. There is no consensus, and I think it's wrong to have a vote on anything that is presented as meaningful in the ultimate report to the GNSO.
Right. So David, I just want to be clear that the PDP asked us to do a couple of things, one of which we're not doing very well, but which I hope that we'll at least sort of be able to do, is to produce a report and talk about what we've done and what we figured out. One other thing it asked us to do, which is where we're failing, is to do it in a certain time frame. But I'd like to keep relative, as timely as we possibly can, especially since the board has further endorsed the revised time frame we put together. And the third thing it asked us to do is there's some other things as well, but in the report to indicate both what the view of the task force is as well as any minority viewpoint. So,
well, I think the view of the task force ought to be and must be that there is no consensus, period. The views of the various constituencies can be presented, but the ultimate fact is very simply there is no consensus. There is no recommendation.
Can you put me in the queue, please, Jordan?
Sure. We are
quick comment.
Yeah, sure. We are very much over time, so but go ahead very briefly.
Okay. Basically, the way the other task forces and working groups have been working these days is to indicate a level of support. So true, there is not full consensus. Consensus is rarely full, but certainly we can indicate strong support, weak support, no support on any of the recommendations and pass them through with minority statements as to why they don't support it.
Right. So certainly in the first pass in the preliminary report, that's exactly the approach that I had intended. In the longer run with the final report, I think we do need to end up with so it could be that David's right, and all we'll present is something along the lines of, there is no consensus. I think we can come to consensus that we have no consensus if we wanted to. The other approach that we could take is to essentially indicate whether there's a majority viewpoint and minority viewpoint or level of support. I don't think we need to decide this at this very moment because I think we've already decided that the preliminary report is going to be just as I've described, which is here are the various positions and here's the various levels of support along with them. And in the interest of getting everyone else off the call, I think I'm going to defer the rest of that conversation. But I think it is a worthy topic, David, and maybe if I'll send out what I had planned in terms of a voting mechanism, and if you want to raise your objection on the list, and we can maybe have some further discussion there.
Jordan, Maria, just a quick point, I guess. It looks like we're still quite far from completing our discussions on a couple of, on the access to data terms of reference for. So think perhaps next week about what the impact is on that of that on finalizing the task force report.
Yes. So I think it's unlikely we'll be quite ready to produce our report a week from today. I'm going to give us one more week of wiggle room and suggest that we actually defer that one week. But I think we definitely need to have this done by the time we get to the Thanksgiving holiday in the U.S. and people start to travel to Rio. I want to have the public comment period open by Rio. And so, I'm sorry, by São Paulo.
Rio would be nicer.
Yeah, it would be nicer. Someone talk to whoever made that.
Thanks, Jordan.
But in any case, so we'll aim to try to have everything finalized. I mean, I think we need to have everything finalized 2 weeks from today. So next week we'll concentrate on remaining substantive discussions. We'll revisit Steve's proposal and see if maybe in the intervening week had any movement on any of the other proposals. If I'm not seeing any movement that any of the alternative proposals that have been put forward recently are going to get us to something that resembles consensus, I'm going to abandon them and suggest that we just leave it with the original, with the OPAC proposal and those alternatives that Steve's forward. If, on the other hand, we're able to make some movement towards something that looks like consensus, we'll have some further discussion along those lines, and then we'll also try to revisit the access to data topic, and I hope that by then, Ross can at least put together a brief description of what Tucson says.
Okay. Great, thank you.
Okay, sorry for running late, everyone. I suspect next week's call is probably going to be somewhat long as well. Hopefully we'll end on time at least, though. I'll try to put together a more formal proposal by the end of the agenda by the end of the week again.
Thanks, Jordan.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.